We're proud to be sponsored by MyFlex Learning. MyFlex Learning is a scheduling platform that helps middle and high schools meet the individual needs of all students. Schools can easily create and manage time for flex blocks, win time, activity periods, RTI, counselor and teacher appointments, and much more. And with its built-in accountability tool and reporting features, MyFlex Learning solves your challenges around getting kids where they need to be and understanding how flex time is spent. Make your flex time work for you. Visit myflexlearning.com/B to learn more and receive $500 off the first year. That's myflexlearning.com/BE.
Every child deserves a team. That's the belief behind Jigsaw Learning, a proud sponsor of the B Podcast Network. And it's why the company, founded by educators Curtis and Lorna Hewson, focuses on ensuring success for all learners through collaborative response, an approach in which every child is supported by a team. Through customized professional learning that incorporates workshops, leadership development, online learning opportunities, and more, Jigsaw Learning can guide you every step of the way to create a plan to maximize the collective capacity in your schools. Learn more at jigsawlearning.ca.
Have you ever watched or attended a swimming lesson? Have you ever watched how some students are afraid to even be in the water and others are waiting patiently, well, maybe not so patiently, to get in the water because they're good at it and they're anxious to do it? You see, that's what differentiation in the classroom is all about. And that's about connecting with students and families on an emotional level. Hey everyone, Dr. Jones here, and welcome to another episode of Seen to Lead. And this week I talked to Dave Schultz, who uses this swimming example and even an example from YouTube about failure and how we need to more accurately present it and support it in our students if they're to reach their highest level of success. That's right. Examples galore in this one. And we even talk a little bit about grading and exams. I want to jump right into this episode and get to getting better with you. But first, I want to apologize for the sound. For some reason, it's a little off, so there may be some strain in listening, but if you're anything like me, you'll find yourself leaning in a little closer, focusing a little more, and learning a little more as a result. Thanks for taking the time, and remember, hit that subscribe button, leave a 5-star rating, and don't forget to write a review. It helps the show a ton. Now, without any further delay, let's get to getting better with Dave Schultz on Seen to Lead.
Let's talk about flex time in schools. The potential benefits to our students make it worth exploring. More time for personalized learning, increased choice and agency for students, and the increased engagement that comes along with it, dedicated time for intervention. Overall, as school leaders, it gives us and our faculty more tools to increase academic achievement. But the implementation and management of flex time can be a challenge. Tricky logistics and a lack of clear accountability systems can prevent teachers from buying in and can hold us back from ensuring students make good use of their time. I'm pleased to share that MyFlex Learning provides a solution to these challenges and more. MyFlex Learning helps you create and manage flexible time for any purpose. And with seamless SIS integration, a student locator, flexible daily rostering, and an intuitive mobile app, it eliminates the common challenges of implementation and management. Want to see for yourself? Visit myflexlearning.com/B to learn more and receive $500 off the first year of use. That's myflexlearning.com/BE.
Leave your ego at the door. It's not about you. It's about the kids. And that's one of the reasons why I got out of the classroom, is because I was running into too many administrators that were making it about them and butting heads way too many times. So I just, at that point, my wife says, oh, why don't you go into IT? And I went into IT and did that. And so now I'm really clear with IT and corporate training. So, but yeah, it's about the kids. It's got to be all about the kids. You're there to, that's your product that you're making. You know, you're making the future of this country in whatever shape it is. And it is okay that at the end of that assembly line, when they go on to the next school, the next thing, whatever, that each thing that comes off that assembly line looks totally different than the one before it.
Dr. Chris Jones here, and welcome to Seeing to Lead, a show designed to help leaders increase their ability to effectively support, engage, and empower their staff through intentional practices so that they create an environment where everyone reaches their greatest level of success. On Seeing to Lead, communication rules the day as we hear voices from both teachers and leaders in an effort to examine perspectives, highlight misunderstandings, and provide steps to ultimately bridge the gap between what teachers need and provide through thoughtful dialogue. This show is about amplifying voices, creating understanding, and providing information to help everyone continually improve. I want to personally thank you for taking the time. Now, let's get to getting better. Dave Schultz is a former school teacher with 16 years of classroom experience. Dave also has 20 years of teaching experience in untraditional settings. He has a bachelor's degree and 2 master's degrees in education. And while in the classroom, he was a certified as a music teacher. He taught band, orchestra, choir, and general music at all levels, preschool through college. Other items he has taught include swimming, Microsoft Office, SAP, contract management soft skills, customer relationship management, presentation skills, and computer skills. He comes from a family of teachers. At one point in time, there were 13 active professional teachers in the family. And now his spare time is all about his kids. As my regular listeners probably know, I am excited about having Dave on the podcast because I'm interested in the idea of traditional teaching experience versus untraditional settings. And I definitely like the list of non-traditional settings in Dave's bio. So, Dave, I can't wait to find out a little bit about how all this works. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Well, you know, Dave, I mentioned this about the idea of non-traditional settings versus the classroom setting. Could you talk to us a little bit about what those non-traditional settings looked like? And then maybe how they shaped your thinking about the classroom and what that should look like or maybe should not look like.
I'll talk to the first one about teaching swimming, you know, being in a pool, teaching a bunch of kids. That one was actually my first teaching job. It was when I was in high school. I was doing that. And that just really, you know, you're in a situation where you have people that are totally comfortable with what's going on, and you have people that are scared out of their mind, that have that fear of water that they're not going to be able to get over. And one of the things I think that it really pushed me to do, two of the things that really pushed me to do. One was improvise. Here I am, while I have this person in the water, trying to think of so many different ways possible to get them over their fears. And two, it taught me differentiation. Because how I was teaching swimming and we wanted to go along with the Red Cross standards, and Red Cross for the kids have all these different levels going up and get certificates and awards if you pass a level and things like that. You know, you have kids that are put in your level or whatever class you're teaching for a reason. You know, you have to keep challenging the kids that are doing well and are comfortable to be pushing ahead while doing everything you can to get those that are afraid of the water and don't want to do anything to even participate at all and keep everybody engaged. And, you know, you don't want a kid sitting on the side of a pool for 20 minutes of a 45-minute class. You know, it's just all those kind of things that really pushed me. And it was really, I didn't realize it until actually you asked me that question, that I was doing all that stuff as a 16-year-old, figuring all that stuff out just to keep everybody working and keep everybody going.
Yeah. And that sounds a lot like what we hear from teachers in classrooms today, where you have the students that need all your support. You have the students who are excelling. And I'm sure you ran into this in your music classes. And you've got it's really a balancing act in supporting those students and getting them up to the level where they need to be and challenging the students that are above the average level, so to speak. And you couldn't see me do air quotes, those listeners. But what's important to me is, as a leader, is thinking about how I can support teachers in those endeavors, because that's extremely difficult. And now with the, you know, you throw in special education plans and you throw in English language learners, it's very difficult. So what are your thoughts around how leaders can support teachers in classrooms?
Biggest thing I think needs to happen is there needs to be resources available. That I'm speaking on this more as a parent. All three of my kids are the new Bulwark, they have neurodivergent. All three of them have their own unique stuff going on, but the resources that are out there are very limited. They're very much so from the standpoint of trying to jam a square peg in a round hole, I'd say. You know, they're not flexible to meet everybody's individual needs or things along those lines. So that's the one thing that I found from that standpoint is that the resources aren't there. Like a lot of the time with one of my daughters who has a few documented learning issues, we were finding stuff that we're doing at night during her homework that we then pass along to the teacher. And, you know, my knowledge as a teacher, my wife's knowledge as a teacher, that's kind of opposite how it should be. So it just seems like it's a lot of trial and error on our part, but we're finding the stuff that works with her and then passing it along to the teacher instead of that, the opposite.
Instead of the teacher passing it along to the family. So let's get to the nitty gritty. Are you talking about, when you talk about resources, are you talking about leaders providing instructors information? Are you talking about them providing professional development, people that can come in and show them how to do things so that they can share it? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, all of the above. All of it.
D, all the boxes above.
Yeah, it's just, they're, from what I'm seeing and my experience through my children and what they're going through, there's just not that much out there. And for me, I'm Googling a lot and trying to find a lot and sifting through the stuff that I know won't fit my kids.
Yeah. And, you know, that's got to increase. I go back to when you first started talking and you were talking about having students that were totally comfortable versus all the way to scared out of their minds in the pool. Well, we have those same scenarios in classrooms. You don't have to be in a pool for that, where you have students who are totally comfortable, maybe even bored, and you have all the way to students that are scared about what they're doing. They're embarrassed, and you know, you get the behavioral issues that they act out when they're scared. To be able to improvise in a situation like that, I think about the teacher juggling that, but then also based on how that student is affected in class, the communication to home, that puts the parents in kind of the same position, where you have parents that are legitimately scared for their students and some that are kind of tuned out. Do you think more information home would serve to improve that? Is there a way to improve that?
To me, for that kind of situation, it depends on the parent. I have seen parents that, well, yes, they want the information, or yes, they're in that situation where it's just like they're throwing their hands up. I'm trying, but I don't know what to do. And giving those types of parents that information to help them out and giving them the support, also not just the information, but some support and encouragement too, is going to go a long way. But then you have the parents, and there's quite a few of them out there that, like, okay, between 8 and 3, they're yours. I don't care what you do with them. I don't want to hear about it. And when they come home, they're off in their room and they're seen and not heard type thing. No.
Yeah. Well, so you're a parent and you were a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we engage those parents?
That, you know, you got to try and reach them on you got to reach them on an emotional level. You gotta find that one part of all of it that makes it click for them, that makes the connection of, oh, yes, I do have to do something here. I do have to step in. This is my child, and my child needs me. You know, that you got to find whatever that trigger is to get it going.
So once we get them, engaged, is there, and we get them emotionally connected, I think about maybe utilizing the student to do that. I just had a meeting the other night, and the parents that I was meeting with on this committee said, well, what do you need from us? How can we help what you're doing? And my first knee-jerk response, which I often end up saying, my first knee-jerk response to them was, get your kids involved. Like, what is it that it will take to get your kids involved? So what would our schools need to look like, do you think? If you walk into a school and it's a perfect world, what does it look like where students are going to be involved enough to get their parents involved?
I kind of see that, like my utopian class world classroom here. You know, everything's easy for one, but like the teacher is not necessarily so focused on the textbook. They're being creative. They're using technology in positive ways, not just having their smart board be a glorified whiteboard. You know, they're actually doing activities with it. They're able to easily create activities on like tablets or Chromebooks for kids to use to have them engaged. But learning is not just all, like I said, it's not just textbook learning too. It's experiential learning through STEM activities or group activities, you know, having kids act out a scene from a book and then, okay, put a stop on that scene and say, okay, now we're going to do the scene going forward and we're going to change this about it and how's this going to look, and making kids improv on the spot and tell the rest of the story with the plot twist the teacher was giving them. You know, that's how it should be. It's not like kids being forced to sit at a desk and pencil and paper and standardized tests and all of that. You know, it's got to be enjoyable for everybody along the way.
And I would assume if it's enjoyable for the students, it'd be much more enjoyable for the teachers, right?
Yeah, because the kids will be engaged. The kids will be wanting to learn more. I'm a corporate trainer right now. And my second job as a corporate trainer. And I always tell people, ask your questions. Don't just sit there and take everything that I say. Ask the questions. I appreciate that because, you know, for me, it gives me something where they're at, but it also pushes me. You know, people are telling me their problems with the software that I'm training. So now I'm going in there and digging and finding out, okay, this is how it works. You know, it pushes me to be better too. So those kind of situations are things that I like too.
Where they're engaged and they're, you know, they're following along. You know, I'm glad you mentioned the corporate training piece. So when you go in and you do corporate training, you complete the training, people are expected to know what you've trained. And you mentioned sitting in desks and taking assessments and or standardized tests, I believe your phrase was. So how do you assess, what's your ideal way of assessing? How do you assess in corporate training? How do you think things should be assessed in classrooms?
I work closely. We have a compliance team that checks everybody's work. They audit everybody's work. So I work closely with them to find out where the errors are at. And then the other thing that I do for assessing is I listen. Like, I will take walks around the office and I'll listen to what people say. I'm not like, I'm eavesdropping, but eavesdropping with a purpose of finding out, are they really getting it? Are they really understanding? Do they need extra help? You know, the hearing those conversations, that to me, listening is like one of the most important skills. And yes, as a music teacher, I needed to listen to hear things, but I've kind of like taken that to another level with what I'm doing as a corporate trainer too.
Supporting your teachers and students seems to be a struggle. They just don't seem to be engaged. You wish they would take more responsibility for their learning and culture of the building, but they just don't seem to be empowered enough to do it. So, my question is, Have you checked out the book Seeing to Lead yet? It's all about creating a true educational experience where learning, growth, leadership, and community take center stage. Full of strategies and resources, Seeing to Lead is about attaining that goal by employing a model that supports, engages, and empowers all individuals to become leaders themselves. Pick up a copy today at seeingtolead.com. That's SEEINGTOLEAD.com. Remember, you don't become a leader and then decide you need to support and recognize others more than yourself. It is the moment you realize it's about supporting and recognizing others that you become a leader. SeeingToLead.com.
So that begs the question for me, I can't wait to hear your answer for this. The idea of walking around, listening, seeing what questions people are asking, seeing how that's going on. That's great. A lot of what we would call informal formative assessment, right? You remember those words from being in the classroom. But we also attach grades to performance. What are your thoughts on grading in schools and what that looks like?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked me this question. I really am.
Did I just open up a can?
You did. I'm very happy that you asked this question. I think from watching what goes on with my kids and watching what goes on in the lot, I think grades are totally being used wrong nowadays. I think teachers need to be looking at grades, and the first thing they need to look at is themselves when it comes to grades. If a teacher gives a test and every kid on fails that test, the teacher needs to look at themselves and say, I didn't teach this right if the kids didn't get it. If every single kid in my class failed this test, I did something wrong and I need to redo it. That's number one. And then it goes into what the kids know. But you need to take into account, it's that test anxiety. You say it's a test. Just saying the words is a test. And you get kids that start to freeze up and panic. And then you have to, what if they had a bad day that day? What if you know, mom, everybody woke up late and they weren't able to have breakfast. And so that's throwing them up. So all those kind of things play a role into it. So, you know, do things, a test or give a test the first time through, everybody feels it. Oh, that's the Bible gospel truth, and everybody feels it, so I'm putting it in the grade book. No, you got it. Grades can show so many things than just what the student knows. And grades are also just a snapshot for that particular time. You know, it doesn't reflect everything about the student. Like I said, there's so many factors that could be going on that could impact what a student does on a test. And it's mind-boggling to me. Like, I've known and heard of teachers and seen teachers that will put down in the grade book, everybody failed the test, and move on. And to me, my personal opinion on that is so many people are so focused on curriculum and standards and, you know, checking the boxes off of, yes, I met every curriculum standard throughout the year, well, I'm good, I don't have to worry or anything like that. When they get to that point and they're good, they're not waiting and seeing and making sure that the students are actually learning the topics being taught. You know, are you teaching to cover all your standards and you can check everything off? Or are you waiting to make sure that each student has an understanding and a grasp of the topic before you move on? Because the issue that comes with that is there's no foundation that's built. You have no foundation for your household, and now you're destroying new materials, new building materials, using the household metaphor. You're throwing bricks and wires and everything just on a empty hole and hoping it's going to become something.
So you mentioned something a moment in time, right? A snapshot for an assessment. So I have to ask, before I tell you what my thoughts are on them, I have to ask you, what do you think about midterms and finals?
I get where they're coming from. And if it's done, it's to me, it's something that's got to be done right. You can't just give a midterm and like not give study materials, not provide study materials, not do reviews, things like that, and expect every single kid to remember stuff that happened 4 months ago. You know, you got to give them a fighting chance. You got to help refresh their memories. You know, they are just kids. You know, they're not the adults that I'm teaching, and even the adults that I'm teaching have trouble with it, and I work with them and help them out to get through it. But they are kids, even up until they get to college, and even at the college level, people still say they're kids, and I can agree with that to a point. But you can't expect that memory. You got to help do something to drive that memory and get those things sparked up before giving a midterm or a final exam.
Okay. I was just curious on your thoughts because of your thoughts about grading. And now I told you before, I tell you what I think of them. We got rid of midterms and finals at my school. And we did it for one of the reasons we did it was because of what, and I'd be lying if I didn't say there was pushback. One of the reasons we did it was because of the loss of face time in front of teachers. Because of what you mentioned about the whole review, well, you review for a week and then you have a week of half days and it's time lost in front of the teacher. I think, you know, the time you get in front of the teacher is some of the most valuable time that you have. So I figured I'd ask you about that as we went along. But you, you know, something else you had said was using technology creatively instead of, you know, remember the days when all the laptops started coming into classrooms and teachers would have the students open them up and they would type their essay on them instead of writing them, just to say they, and then they'd say they were using it. And that's not, I'm not bad mouthing teachers. A lot of that fell on leadership because that's what leadership was doing as far as their expectations. Can you give me some examples of one, what you think, using technology creatively in the classroom looks like? And two, how leaders can support that or facilitate that happening.
My wife, who teaches sixth grade, she does something where she challenges the kids to come up with something. And I can't, like, the gadget she uses is called a Makey-Makey. I don't know if you've heard of that or not.
No.
So what it is, it's components. Like, you could set it up to where, in all honesty, you could have a banana, hold a banana in your hand and use it with your thumbs to control a video game. Theoretically, with all these components to the Makey-Makey, you know, that kind of stuff. So I can't remember what exactly it was my wife brought in, but she's like challenging her students. Okay, you want to use this? Figure out a way to use the Makey-Makey, interact with the smart board and interact with this game and you can use it. You know, that kind of, those kind of things make them think outside of the box, using, not just using PowerPoint to make slides, use the animations in the slides, use the picture features, use all these different features to make things stand out. You know, the bare minimum is being done a lot. You know, you could have people, you can have people come up with like business concept and use the technology to put together the business idea and the presentation to like a Shark Tank type deal there where you could do that. And not only that, you have like 3D printers where people can come up with their concept ideas and print out the ideas and go through the whole thing. You know, all of these options are there for people to use and put in those real life examples of stuff rather than just the story problems that the textbook uses.
You know, one of the biggest things that stood out to me when you were explaining that and what your wife is doing, where she says, look, if you can figure this out, you can use it, is that problem solving piece. And just oftentimes I find that we as adults, when we're dealing with technology anyways, need to just step out of the way. Tell them what you want to do, get out of the way. And the students, because they want to do it, so now you've got that engagement piece, right? The students will figure out a way. And if we as adults, or at least I've seen myself doing this, step back and look at what the student's doing and the problem solving going on, it's just fantastic to watch. And they get it done.
Yeah, and I want to kind of piggyback on what you're saying too. is you've got to teach the students how to fail and fail correctly. That's one thing that I'm seeing nowadays with my kids and their friends. They're so afraid to fail because grades are used against them and they get a negative response if they fail, where failure can be such a good teacher. You know, there's quotes out there all over the internet about failure being the best teacher and things along those lines. If you, one of the things I taught when I was teaching band, yes, you can make a mistake, but it's how you handle yourself when you're making that mistake that matters. If you're playing an instrument and you make a mistake and then you go, you like give the big grandiose response of, oh gosh, darn it, I made the mistake and all that, then everybody's going to know you made the mistake. But if you make the mistake and you just hold yourself up high and keep going as you were and jump back in when you can, nobody's going to know you made the mistake. Except for me, but because I heard
it. Right.
But nobody out there is going to know. So it's how you handle your mistake that makes a huge difference. So that's, you know, I impress myself because, like, I'll watch YouTube videos on how to fix stuff around the house or how to fix the cars and things like that. And then I'm able to do it. And I make mistakes along the way, but I go back, watch the video again, learn from it and do it. And then, you know, I'm somewhat amazed at myself that yes, I was just able to, gosh, what is it that I replaced? I can't even remember. It was on my wife's car. She was having, the engine was going bad. I was able to take this part off, part of the engine, clean it all off and put it back together, and it ran great. You know, that's all it was that. But, you know, for me, not coming from that much of a mechanical background, to go into a car, pull an engine component off, and successfully get the car working again, I was semi-amazed that I was able to do that. You know, it's because you learn these things and you fail at them, and then you remember all these things that you did it when you did wrong, and you can make your corrections and move forward and grow and all those kinds of things. So, like, the kids got to be allowed to fail and do those during those problem solving steps too.
100%. And my normal listeners know this about my family, but my youngest son, well, my oldest son is in engineering and he's got a 3D printer that's always running in the back room. He's always programming something and making something. And my youngest son has taken a different tact. He is a blacksmith, and that is his goal in life, to become a better blacksmith. So he's out in our backyard doing that. He sees things on YouTube and he goes, hey, I could make that. He sees like other blacksmiths doing things. And then that's what he works with. And to watch the elation, and that word is not too strong, to watch the elation when he finally is able to craft something that he saw a professional do. It's just after he made mistake after mistake after mistake, and then he gets it right. And it's just fascinating to watch and how he figures out how he's supposed to do it. So a couple quick questions for you, not so quick maybe, but as we get to the end of the podcast, I ask every guest these two questions. You've had a long career in education. You're still in education, just on the corporate side. If you weren't an educator, who not what would you be?
I would like to go back and, excuse me, I'd like to go back. I know I put my hand over my mouth and I apologize for that.
That's fine.
It's okay. I would like to go back and I would like to continue my career in baseball. I loved baseball growing up. I still love baseball now, but in ninth grade, I stopped playing organized baseball because the coach played his kid over me, and I knew, not being arrogant, I knew I was better than the coach's kid, and I decided to quit and walk away at that moment. And come to find out a couple years later, when it was too late to do anything about, like a friend of a friend of a friend said, oh yeah, I remember going to one of the games and there's this guy there. And he said, which one's Dave Schultz? And they said, oh, Dave's not on the team anymore. So, like, and they found out, oh, that person was a scout.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. So just, I want to see where that could have gone. And, like, at this point in my life, I would be coaching in some shape or form in somebody's organization after having a great career as a catcher and above average hitter.
Yeah, there you go. Just live with that for a while.
Yep.
So, you know, you talked about a few things. Our conversation took us from what it looks like for your own students and the idea of resources and all the way through, you know, failure and how we approach failure and problem solving. What's the most important piece of advice you would give to leaders as they work to better support, engage, and empower those they serve?
However you want to say it, leave your ego at the door. It's not about you. It's about the kids. And that's one of the reasons why I got out of the classroom, because I was running into too many administrators that were making it about them and butting heads way too many times. So I just, at that point, my wife says, oh, why don't you go into IT? And I went into IT and did that and won now in the new career with IT and corporate training. So, but yeah, it's about the kids. It's got to be all about the kids. You're there to, that's your product that you're making. You know, you're making the future of this country in whatever shape it is. And it is okay that at the end of that assembly line, when they go on to the next school, the next thing, whatever, that each thing that comes off that assembly line looks totally different than the one before it.
Well, that is a fantastic response and something that I think all leaders should think about. You know, it's very clear today that there is a national teacher shortage. There's a national administrator shortage all the way up the chain. And to think that there are leaders out there still making it about themselves that push good educators out the door, that's a shame. That's nothing good at all, especially when it seems to be born of selfish motives. But, you know, look, Dave, if people want to get in touch with you to ask any more about your thoughts or your experiences and how it relates, is there a good way they can get in touch with you? What's the best way they could reach out?
Best is I'm not really on social media just because that gets to be too fake, so I don't do that much. Probably the best thing is just through email.
Okay.
Yep. I don't know if you want me to share it or if you want to. I'm fully open if you want to provide it to people or.
I'll throw it in the show notes.
Okay. That works.
All right. Awesome. Well, Dave, thanks for spending the time today. I appreciate it. And I'm sure the listeners got something good out of it.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to come on your show.
Well, that's a wrap, but not the end. Next step, be sure to take action on something you heard here today. Hey, thanks for listening to the Seen to Lead podcast. If you would like to connect for any reason, email me at drchrissj@gmail.com or catch me on Twitter at Dr. C.S. Jones. If you've gotten any value from the Seen to Lead podcast today, you can help me and other leaders create a world-class environment through a teacher-centric approach by subscribing to the show, leaving an honest rating or review, and sharing this episode on social media with your most valuable takeaway. Also, one last thing. Have you had a chance to pick up my latest 5-star rated book yet? Grab your copy of Seeing to Lead anywhere you buy books or at seeingtolead.com. That's SEEINGTOLEAD.com, where you can learn more and continue to improve. Now go have a successful week.
And now a quick word from our sponsor, Jigsaw Learning. Whether you lead at the school, district, or division level, you're serving a wide array of students, and you know that no one person has all the answers when it comes to meeting each of their needs. That's why Jigsaw Learning helps leaders and their staff and faculty to develop a collaborative approach. Every child deserves a team, and when you put together the pieces of effective collaboration, you can realize that team's full potential. Connection, relationships, and authentic collaboration are at the foundation of Jigsaw Learning's work. Through professional learning presented on-site, online, or a blend of both, Jigsaw's team of experienced learning associates works with you to develop a personalized plan to help collaborative response thrive in your organization. Learn why educators have described working with Jigsaw Learning as powerful, wonderful, and beneficial for all students. Visit jigsawlearning.ca and connect with the team for information. That's jigsawlearning.ca.
There are lots of solutions out there for giving students what they need when they need it. But when do they actually do all those things? You need flexible time. When added into your master schedule, flex time enables students to get extra help or intervention, meet with teachers, make up work, get physical exercise, and try new enrichment offerings. If you're thinking of giving it a try, check out MyFlex Learning, which unlocks the benefits of flex time without the common challenges. Its intuitive design and SIS integration makes implementation and training a breeze. Make your flex time work for you. Visit myflexlearning.com/B to learn more and receive $500 off your first year. That's myflexlearning.com/BE.